Welcome back to the American Revolution Podcast, Episode 30, The Continental Hannibal. Last episode, we had concluded our business with the Siege of St. John. St. John is surrendered, and now Montgomery was focusing his business on Montreal itself. But before we go into that, I would actually like to talk about probably one of the boldest moves in all of the American Revolution. Now, I had mentioned several episodes back that Benedict Arnold leaves Fort Ticonderoga. He's going to travel to Philadelphia and then get orders to head up to Cambridge to Washington's camp. Washington and the Connecticut representative Silas Deane are very impressed with his ability and aptitude. And on September 8th, Washington meets with Arnold to discuss a mission he has for him. Now, the mission had been discussed with Washington and Schuyler, and what they wanted to do was to have a secondary force travel through the woods of Maine, at the time would have been known as the Massachusetts colony, but for all argument's sake, we're going to call it Maine. The Kennebec expedition, as it will become known, would take this second force through the woods of Maine into Canada, and if possible, take possession of the capital, Quebec City, or at the very least, divert attention until Schuyler could arrive in the province and help assist with the capture of the capital. Now, Washington tells Arnold that he has to say very specific things to not offend, alienate, or in any way threaten the Canadians. The message from Washington was printed on broadsides, and it went something like this. By the advice of many friends of liberty in Quebec, Congress has sent troops into the province not to plunder, but to protect you, to animate and to bring forth into action those sentiments of freedom you have disclosed, and which the tools of despotism would extinguish. The Continental Northern Army would respect property and traditional religious differences. These are irrelevant in the patriot struggle. There is no reason for the Canadians to flee as before an enemy. Instead, they should join the other colonies in an indissoluble union and freely range themselves under the standard of general liberty. The broadsides are printed in both English and French. They were given to Arnold, and he was under orders to pass them out as he got into Canada, and he was also given money so that he could avoid plundering and just buy all supplies that he would need. Washington cautions Arnold, follow his orders explicitly, or it could damage the relationship between the 13 colonies and the Canadians. Arnold is given a force of about 1,000 men. He has two provisional battalions of New England volunteers, plus another three companies of riflemen, men from Virginia and Pennsylvania. Arnold leaves Cambridge on September 13th, sailing towards Fort Western, which is in current-day Augusta, Maine. Now, this mission, of course, is of the utmost secrecy. No one can know what Arnold is doing. This 1,000-man force is going to be a secret force that's going to surprise the British and the Canadian loyalists who are right now fighting with Schuyler. Of course, with any secret mission, everyone knows about it. It's actually in a Philadelphia newspaper. They talked about the mission, commenting, saying, "We shall hear of Arnold's capture of Quebec within a few weeks." Now, Arnold arrives at Fort Western and has to wait a few days so the essential bateau can be completed. Now, we've talked about bateau before, but it's just a quick reminder. Bateau is the French word for boat. These are flat-bottom boats that were used mostly in transportation of men and supplies on the rivers. Now, the bateaux that were being put together for Arnold at Fort Western were put together quickly using greenwood. The work was, we'll just say, shoddy at best. Arnold's advance guard left on September 25th. The rest of the army would leave not too long after that. But by October 13th, the expedition had made it to the Dead River. This is about 100 miles north of Fort Western. This is a difficult journey. The bateaux were smashed up on the rapids, the green wood that they used absorbed water, so they would sit low in the water, and when you tried to portage them, they were god-awfully heavy. The men got sick from the cold water. Deaths from sicknesses or drowning were not uncommon. And the expedition was only made more difficult when on October 25th, Arnold's trailing division, under the command of Lieutenant Colonel Roger Enos, with about 250 men, turned around, taking many of the expedition's supplies with them. Enos would use the excuse that his men just couldn't go on. But 2 days later, Arnold is over the Appalachians and arrives at Lake Megantic in Quebec. Now, this is a bold move. He took 1,000 men through the early winter in Maine, because from living up there, the end of October, November, that's getting close to wintertime up in the Northwoods. But this is a bold move. Some say that it is even equal to Hannibal Barca's march over the Alps. Now, I will say, as much as I love Benedict Arnold, I still say the edge goes to Hannibal Barca. He had elephants. Just saying. During the march, Arnold is sending off all kinds of messages, keeping his commanders up to date as his progress, but he's also sending messages ahead to people who would be helpful to the Continental cause when they arrive at Quebec. And the person he sends a message to is John Dyer Mercer, a Patriot supporter in Quebec and an old friend of Arnold's from past business dealings. The message that he sends basically informs him of the Patriot mission and to expect their arrival soon, because it's not long before they're crossing the Appalachians into the province of Quebec. Well, of course, like all the good fortune that the early Continental Army has, the message is intercepted by royal authorities, and Mercer is arrested. Arnold's men arrive at the frontier town of Sardegan. Pretty sure I pronounced that name right, but once again, with most of these names of provincial Canadian towns, I have trouble with them. But when they arrive, the townspeople would say that they looked more like ghosts than men. Now, the townspeople were welcoming, and Arnold was able to buy the supplies that he needed. Arnold even educates some of the local Indians about the nature of the quarrel between the king and his children. He would offer to pay them $8 per month with a $2 advance. While that doesn't take much convincing, 32 would join immediately. The Canadians were actually welcoming to the Continentals. They were supplying them with provisions, giving them lodging, even transporting injured soldiers back downriver. Now, on the surface, this sounds fantastic, except that the Canadians were mostly doing this for money. In fact, the Canadians in the Chaudière Valley didn't even pick up a musket. Arnold won't get that kind of support from the Canadians in this area. He's going to have to rely on his own men. He's not going to see the companies of Canadian patriots flocking to his banner like Livingston had with Montgomery's army. So the Continentals began to move to Point Levy on November 7th, with Arnold arriving at the point on the 9th. Two Indians actually bring him a letter. It's from Montgomery. For the first time, the two armies are now in communication. Arnold had three choices. He could move south, join Montgomery at Montreal, he could hold position, or he could cross the St. Lawrence River and try and take Quebec City on his own. We all know that he's not going to be able to sit still. Arnold is a man that doesn't want to sit still, but he has the brains to back it up, unlike some other more eccentric commanders in the Continental Army. But he's not going to hold. Going south, well, that might be counterproductive, considering that the garrison is supposedly very meek, and so maybe he could force a capitulation before Montgomery even arrives. From Point Levy, Arnold could see the lower town and the cliffs and the imposing walled city above. Arnold had hired Canadians to build scaling ladders and other equipment needed to scale the walls. He also had bought canoes while in the Chaudière Valley. Fortunate for him, because the Loyalists, knowing that the Continentals were on their way, had gone out and burned all the boats, bateaux, and canoes in the area around Point Levy. So on the night of November 13th, Arnold and his men crossed the St. Lawrence to Wolfe's Cove, the very spot that the British would land in 1759 when they captured Quebec City. Now, the crossing itself is still a bit risky. There are some British Navy vessels that are on the river, but they get across without any issue. There was an issue, but it had nothing to do with the British Navy ships. It actually had everything to do with the lack of canoes. You see, Arnold got a whole bunch of canoes, but the problem was he didn't have enough. He didn't have enough to bring over 150 men that were still on the other side of the river, along with their scaling ladders and equipment they needed. So Arnold had to improvise. He positions his men on the Plains of Abraham about 300 yards from the city walls. It's here that he gets new intelligence. Arnold is informed that a garrison was actually around 1,000 men. Arnold has to rethink his plan, so he thinks about blockading the city. Arnold thought maybe if the garrison could be baited out into an open fight, he could have a chance. Or even better, seeing the city blockaded, the officials would balk and give up the city. So Arnold lined up his men, gave out 3 huzzas, hoping to possibly scare those who were watching from the wall that the Continentals were there and meant business. But their huzzas were promptly answered by cannon. So Arnold tries again the next day. He sends forward a flag of truce, hoping to meet with those inside the city and possibly meet with the lieutenant governor and get him to surrender the city. But once again, as the flag approached the city walls, more cannon. So the Continentals had to set a blockade, and they would have to wait for Montgomery's arrival. That doesn't mean that they sat around. The Continentals just began scouting the area and venturing farther out into the countryside, passing out Washington's message. Inside Quebec, Lieutenant Governor Cremer is preparing for the inevitable Continental siege. He has available to him about 1,000 Royal Highlanders. They actually had arrived just before the Continentals did, as well as a Royal Navy frigate. Lucky for them, it was loaded with some Marines, so the city defenses were actually augmented by another 50 Marines as well. Colonel McLean will actually march to Quebec City as well. After his failed mission with Sorrel and trying to break the siege at St. John, he just promptly turned around and went back to Quebec City. It's here where he takes over overall command of the city defenses and preparing whatever garrison they do have for either an inevitable Continental strike, or they're going to have to go out and push Arnold off the field. Arnold, on the other hand, actually has the support of the Canadians out in the rural countryside, but they won't join his ranks. So he only has about 680 men, and of those 680, he did not have enough muskets to go around, and the average amount of cartridges per man was somewhere around 5 rounds. Oh, and they also had no bayonets, which is a pivotal tool when you're talking hand-to-hand combat with the British. So all in all, Arnold's men are a bit scraggly and definitely undersupplied. On November 19th, Arnold actually has to move his men to Pointe-aux-Trembles. Quebec City sees that Arnold has moved his men from blockading the city, and they'll take their time to take in fresh provisions. They had to get as much provisions in because they knew that there was a secondary Continental army somewhere in the vicinity, and they had to make sure that they had enough for any kind of prolonged siege. But of course, the British had to pay inflated prices for their supplies. The British governor took this time to gather as many supplies as he could quickly because he knows that Benedict Arnold is coming back, and Schuyler, or at this point now Montgomery, is coming with him. So that's going to do it for this week. This episode wasn't overly long. Arnold's Kennebec expedition is a great topic. It's a very expansive topic. I kind of just glossed over the first 100 miles of the journey, which was probably one of the worst. And there are plenty of materials out there to discuss his expedition, and even some of the books I recommend talk about this expedition. But in the interest of time, I just wanted to mention what the experience for Arnold's men was in the briefest of terms, and then continue on when he arrives and he has his invasion, or his version of an invasion of Canada. So it's really not a surprise that this week I've chosen Patriot on the Kennebec, Major Reuben Colburn, Benedict Arnold, and the March to Quebec in 1775, by Mark A. York. Once again, these are one of those books that I've heard great things on, but I just haven't had time myself to get to reading. So I'm recommending this one because it does a lot more discussions on what the actual mission was like, what it put the men through. It also mentions Major Reuben Colburn, someone I did not talk about in this episode, just simply talking about the man who actually planned the construction of the bateau and getting all the supplies and doing it in a very rapid time frame. So that's going to do it for this week. We're going to wrap up the Quebec campaign in the broadest of terms next week, so don't miss. This is a late Tuesday, so I'm probably going to post this episode tomorrow morning, which would be Wednesday. So if you're listening to these episodes live, you're going to get it Wednesday morning. So everyone have a great week, and as always, keep your powder dry.